Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Yeah, this is Rob Dukes from Exodus, and you're listening to Talking Fucking Metal.
This is Ian Brown from Gypsy Hawk. You're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, this is Eric Kluber, a.k.a. Ron Hauser from Gypsy Hawk, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 448 of the Talking Metal Podcast. This is Mark Striegel checking in with you in December of 2013. Wow, this year went by fast, I tell you. Just flew by for me personally. And I thought that this was a good year for music. It is the first year in a few years that I've decided to do a best of year-end list, which I really put a lot of time and effort into thinking about this and trying to get albums on there that I personally just really loved. And I know that there's stuff I missed. I know I didn't obviously have time to hear every single thing that was released in hard rock and heavy metal this year, and that's why I'm hoping that me putting out this list inspires you guys to go on the Talking Metal Facebook page and to send me emails at mark@talkingmetal.com and let me know what albums you think I missed. What were your personal favorites? You know, let me know your top three, your top five. And if you're interested in my top 10, I'm going to tell them to you today. You can also go to talkingmetal.com and check the list out there, my top 10 albums. And I struggled with this list. Definitely really had like probably 25 albums that I really enjoyed that were released this year. And I did narrow it down to 10, then that's the 10 that's up there. So again, I want to hear what you guys think of my list and what you guys were listening to this year, because again, there's definitely stuff I missed or maybe only gave a quick listen to, and I need to go listen to it again, because I don't believe that every record hits you over the head and you love it the first listen. Some records are like that, but not every record is like that. And some of my favorite records of all time took me a few listens to get into. So let me know what your favorite records of 2013 are. Go to my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/mstriegel. There's a Talking Metal Facebook page. There's a Talking Metal digital page. And let me know. So we're going to get to that in a bit. And on the podcast, we have the singer on one of the albums on my top 10 list. It's Generation Kill. He's also known for his work with Exodus. Of course, I'm talking about Rob Dukes. And if you haven't heard the Generation Kill record, again, one of my favorite records of the year, it's called We're All Gonna Die. Another band I've been listening to a lot of lately, on vinyl, believe it or not, is Gypsy Hawk. I picked up their 2012 release, at a show they did in New Jersey here recently. And man, it's rocking me. And I just love the sound of vinyl. Listen, I don't think vinyl's gonna come make a big comeback, but I do think, you know, it has made a little comeback. And it always sounds great to put on vinyl, especially when it's like guitar driven rock and roll, heavy metal. A band like Gypsy Hawk, Revelry and Resilience is the album from 2012, which I just picked up on vinyl at the show in Teaneck, New Jersey, at the Gypsy Hawk show. If you don't know Gypsy Hawk, our friend Eric plays guitar for them. He is also known in the band as Ron Hauser. So if you hear somebody talking about Ron Hauser from Gypsy Hawk, that's actually Eric Kluber, a longtime friend of Talking Metal who played in White Wizard before Gypsy Hawk, and also Overloaded, a great band out of Michigan. My son just snuck down into the basement here, and he's like heading to the unfinished part of the basement where we keep all his... Hey, Harrison, what are you doing, bud? Where we have all his Christmas presents. I think he's discovered that they're there, and he's trying to take peeks at them. There he goes. Hey, dude, what are you doing, man? Anyways, just was interviewing Rob Dukes, which I'm going to play for you in a little bit. I'm glad Harrison didn't run down in the middle of that interview. So anyways, Gypsy Hawk, Eric Kluber, my good friend and my guitar teacher, or at least I've taken one lesson from him. I hope to take more, hung out with me. We had a couple drinks and spoke some metal. We also included in the interview Ian Brown, the drummer of Gypsy Hawk. So I think, why don't we start there with the Gypsy Hawk interview? And I guess it would make sense to play a little Gypsy Hawk beforehand. And then we'll get into some of my favorite music from 2013. This is The Fields by Gypsy Hawk off the Revelry and Resilience record from 2012. Calculated stars and lights.
This is Mark Striegel. We have Eric and Ian from Gypsy Hawk hanging out here on the streets of Teaneck, New Jersey. The first Gypsy Hawk show in New Jersey, correct?
Correct. Our very first time. We drive through it every tour, but we've never played in this beautiful state.
And I thought the crowd was good. You know, it was, they seemed into you guys and enthusiastic. How did you feel about the crowd, Ian?
The crowd was awesome. I mean, what can you expect from New Jersey? We don't know, but but it seemed great. It was awesome. Great stage, fun time.
And how far into the tour are you right now? Is there a lot left in the tour?
Not much at all. Yeah. I think we got like 3, maybe 4 dates left on just the package tour, and then we got to work our way back home.
Cool. And you guys played a new song tonight, which I thought was pretty exciting. Eric, tell us about that. I'm assuming that that means there's new music on the way at some point.
Yeah, there's new music on the way. The new song that we played is The Answers That We Would, which may we find out one day, or no, that's an inside joke. The Answers We Need is what it's called. And Eric wrote it about his favorite, no, not me, by the way, Eric Harris, our singer, his favorite subject, one of them being Dungeons and Dragons, and particularly Mind Flayers. And yes, we have quite a bit of new material demoed, and we do need to write some more as well. Going to be working on a new record, and slated to be recorded in late March of 2014.
And are you guys still working with Metal Blade, or is that to be determined?
We are still working with Metal Blade, yes.
Cool, cool. And where do you find the most enthusiastic crowds when you're on tour?
Montreal.
Really? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I saw some pictures from the Montreal show. Some ladies with you. They looked good.
Beautiful. The women are beautiful in Montreal, no doubt about that. And the fans are super enthusiastic. Toronto's great city. USA, I'd say Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, LA, Austin, New York City.
South.
What do you mean south? Like, go ahead.
Go south. Like, you hit Texas. Texarkana is a fucking amazing time.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. Compared to Austin. I mean, I'm talking about the big hubs. Oh. Chicago.
Yeah.
Detroit was real good this time around. But, like, as far as Canada goes, like, Toronto and Montreal are the shit. And Quebec was really good, too. I really enjoyed playing there as well. First time there.
Excellent. Do you get a big hometown crowd when you play in Detroit?
Yeah, it's building. Absolutely, man. This last time we played, like 2 weeks ago, it was just a homecoming for me, you know?
You know, we're pretty much all transplants, so whenever we go back to our home state, it's just like we meet up with our buds, and they tell their friends, and they tell their girlfriends tell their lesbian friends, and their lesbian friends tell fucking random homeless people that can get money, and they come to our shows, and we just have a great time wherever we're from, so it's always fun.
Excellent. I don't know, this just popped into my head, Eric, the kind of off-topic subject, but remember that guy Chris Gillan?
Yes.
That great singer?
Absolutely, yeah. He was at the Detroit show. One of my best friends.
Cool. He's like one of the only guys I interviewed for Talking Metal, and I never used the interview. I can't remember exactly what happened, but I think about that every now and again, and I don't know if he's still doing music, but I definitely owe him a makeup interview if he's still in the game.
Yeah, right now he was doing Tokyo Blade for a while. And he was doing a cover band for a year or two. Actually, he's been doing that for many years, but his most recent cover band. And I think he's looking to get back into original music. And about once a year, Overloaded does a reunion show back in Detroit. So you should talk to him.
Okay, cool. I will. And talk about how you guys came together.
I met the guys through the original guitar player. I went to music school in Los Angeles, LA Music Academy, and the original guitar player basically found Gypsy Hawk through Craigslist, and he ended up not panning out, and the original drummer was my roommate at the time, and he was just a fucking, like, gamer emulating nerd that never went to class and fucking just sat on his ass all day and was like, oh yeah, I guess I'll join this rock and roll band. But he was like a house jazz drummer, and I was just like, nah, I don't want to fucking be in this band right away. I want to do my own shit. And finally, when both of those guys ended up fucking caking and flaking, then I was just like, yeah, let's play some heavy metal.
So what year did you join?
You know, we were talking about it tonight, Ron and I. Ron joined Valentine's Day about 3 years ago.
2011.
2011 was you, so I was about close to a year after that.
Okay.
Or year before that, I'm sorry. Yeah, so I've been in it about 4 years.
Okay. And then the guitar player, the other guitar player, what's his name again?
Well, our new guitar player, Bryant?
Yeah, now he joined, what, a few months back?
He auditioned 2 weeks before the tour.
Okay, cool. Because I remember reading something about it on the internet. I don't know if it was Facebook or Blabbermouth or something. But so he's working out good, and you'll be doing an album, the upcoming recording and writing with him.
Absolutely. One of his things that was very important for him to join the band was that he was going to be a part of the writing process, which Eric and I really welcome. Any help that we can get, to knock these songs out and make them as good as they can be. He's working out great, and halfway through the tour, we asked him if he wanted to be a permanent member, because you got to go on tour with us, on the road with us, to see if it's going to work. And he was stoked, and we were stoked. He's working out fantastic.
Cool. Well, you guys sounded excellent tonight, and again, I think you won over a lot of people here in New Jersey, and glad that you could finally come to New Jersey and do an actual gig. Last night you played in New York. How'd that gig go, Ian?
Oh, the gig was great. I mean...
Tell them about it. Tell them the whole story.
Well, shit. I was going about 70, 75 miles an hour in a 65, and it was smooth asphalt. And
beautiful roads.
Beautiful roads.
Roads.
And boom, our tire popped.
Exploded. It didn't pop. It exploded. Bang, we got shot by a shotgun.
And I heard fucking two of the band members piss their pants. Another one screamed like fucking Kim Kardashian getting railed. So it was pretty fucking crazy. We ended up pulling over on the side of the road. They said, tow truck's going to be a half hour, fucking like 9 hours later.
It was pretty crazy. It wasn't that bad. But it exploded, and like, it was literally like a grenade, and the shrapnel, if you will, like severed the coolant line, so it wasn't just like a blown tire. And we just got this van also like 2 weeks before, a week before the tour, off this band in L.A. called Volumes, and we bought it for like $1,400. It's been holding up great, all things considered. And it didn't have a spare tire, and we didn't have the money for a spare tire. So anyway, we ended up, it was like the metal gods were shining down on us, so we got towed. And right across the street was an Enterprise rental place, which had a Suburban with a tow hitch, which doesn't exist. Right, wow. Rental places Never. Do not let you tow things. So we took our 2-inch tow hitch capacitor thing off and got the van. And, we made the gig happen, and New York was great.
Excellent. Now, Eric, I wanted to revisit a little of your past, because we had John from White Wizard was on the show, and he was talking about the recent implosion of White Wizard, and he gave us like a 90-minute interview with every little detail, from his side of the story, that is. And he, in the interview, brought up you a number of times, which I thought was kind of weird, because you've been out of that band quite, at least 3 years, right?
Yeah, over 3 years, since 2010.
And did, I don't know if you heard the interview, but I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on him bringing up different stuff, like claiming you were too drunk at some Bruce Dickinson thing to perform, or...
Well, I do tend to get a bit rowdy at times. Let's not beat around the bush there. But I'm not surprised. Me and John never got along. And my whole thing, I thought it was interesting that you told his perspective, but the guy is just straight up full of shit. Always has been full of shit. And Joseph Michael, their, last singer, called him out on it. And the guy doesn't hold back any punches and just told it like it was. And finally, I was really relieved that someone else was, like, saying the shit that I saw and with my own eyes for years.
Which is what? In a nutshell.
I was not surprised to hear that he was embezzling money from the band. I'm not surprised that he's doing shady stuff and he's not giving proper credit to band members, and it rubs people the wrong way. I'm surprised he held it together as long as he did, but I was not surprised to hear that it fell apart. And then I was in Detroit actually for an Overloaded reunion show, and Joseph Michael Facebooked me out of the blue and was like, dude, I don't know why you didn't kill him when you had the chance. I go, I knew what he was talking about. I'm like, what? Who, John? He goes, yeah, I'm stranded here in England, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, as the days progressed, oh, no, was it? We were on tour.
Yeah.
We were on
tour with Valiant Thor.
No, with Scorpion Child.
Scorpion Child.
Okay, yeah. Anywho. Yeah, this was pretty recent.
as the days progressed and the story unfolded bit by bit through Facebook and through podcasts and whatnot, I was not surprised at all. The big thing was makes a lot of promises, doesn't deliver on his end, doesn't give proper credit to band members for their contributions to this song, and has this weird insecurity that he has to be this like mastermind single songwriter, which is not true. So he sets up a band in a band format, but then takes all the credit for everything, and then once again financially behind the scenes is not to be trusted.
Hence Holy Grail.
Well, and hence the creation of the Holy Grail, yeah. He went and copy wrote the name behind them and took the logo and took the songs and took all the credit for it.
Wow. Interesting stuff.
And then from what I heard, and those dudes never got paid. You know, I mean, there was an advance for that record, High Speed GTO. That's the last I heard. Those dudes never saw a dime from that.
Wow.
He pocketed the cash. Apparently he's got some new version that's coming out, and we'll see, man. I mean, it's definitely interesting to follow, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, it actually brought us a lot of streams and downloads, that particular episode. So, you know, it's always good to bring up the White Wizard gossip for us. As far as listenership goes.
Whoever's in that band should have their CCP license, basically.
Great. So, anyways, we are looking forward to new Gypsy Hawk material at some point. And as far as the live gigs go, the tour's wrapping up, you mentioned, soon. Will there be another tour happening, or is it just concentrating kind of on getting new material down?
We're just kind of sitting right now. We need to work on new music. We really want to write a new killer album. We really want to bring it just like the last one, 10 times harder. We're working with the same producer, Zach Oren, up in Oakland. We really like his work. We're really comfortable.
He did somebody else recently. I'm trying to think of who he
did. Pig Destroyer or...
I couldn't tell you.
You know, he's got a list, but it's just, it's really nice working with him. He doesn't have a lot to say. It's just kind of like when we need to tell him to shut the fuck up, he does it. And when he just kind of says, like, yeah, you need to do that again, we kind of know. And our last album we recorded in, what, 6 days? We did the drum tracks in 6 hours.
And real fast.
Real fast. And that's kind of how we like to do it, is like we like to have everything, all our ducks in a row, fucking everything really ready to go, and just show up or throw up and really get it done.
And Ian, who are some of your influences as a drummer?
As a drummer? Holy shit, you're asking the wrong dude.
He's asking you. How's he asking the wrong
well,
dude?
Well, I mean, you know, as the young fucking gun and the crazy kid.
Barely he's a young gun. Brian's almost got him.
You know, I grew up listening to a lot of Tool.
Danny Carey.
A lot of Danny Carey, a lot of fucking Deftones. So Abe Cunningham. But then I got my jazz side. I love Ralph Humphrey, who did Frank Zappa. Fuck, you're putting me on the spot right now.
You know.
You said Ralph Humphrey?
Ralph Humphrey was...
When was he with Zappa?
He was the third drummer of Zappa.
Where's that guy, Chad Wasserman? Where does he fit into it?
He
was later?
Chad was... Oh, shit. I don't know.
I know he was on some of the final Zappa records.
Yeah, okay. I know Ralph was the third member, but, dude, I couldn't even tell you.
Right. No, that's cool. That's cool.
Sorry. Anyway,
no problem. Anyways, guys.
Beam in my system right now.
Guys, we recommend you check out Gypsy Hawk. Go see him live. Go buy the CD, which you can get through metalblade.net or .com.
I think it's metalbladerecords.com or metalblade.com. Just Google it.
Yeah, just Google it. And you can also pick up the vinyl, which I just did tonight. Both records out on vinyl.
Both records. One, the first one is Patience and Perseverance, and that's through Creator Destructor. You can get it off Amazon, whatevs. And then Revelry and Resilience, that's our Metal Blade release. So, once again, just find it somewhere.
Cool. And Eric is actually giving guitar lessons too. We did a, I did a Skype lesson with him. Where can Talking Metal listeners contact you to get a guitar lesson?
Honestly, just hit me up through Facebook.
I had one guy email me. He was like, I want to take a lesson from Eric. And I gave him your email. I don't know if you ever contacted
me. No, that's cool. You can do my email as well. Which, you know what? Just do the Facebook. Let's just do the Facebook thing and keep it simple. Eric Kluber. And the spelling's on the Gypsy Hawk page, because it's weird spelling.
Yeah, we'll link it through today's show notes on TalkingMetal.com. All right, guys, thanks a lot. Checking
thanks,
out.
Mark.
Yeah!
Of a billion female foremen, rarely seen, wielding powers to enchant, binding loving into a trance, into the meadow near the hills and streams, lies the layer of the silver queen, sheer beauty from crown of souls, and she raised her love it from the gates of nose, ethereal, sovereign, born of angels, bereft of sin, to gaze upon her will be your end.
What you just heard was a little Gypsy Hawk, the song.
Hey buddy, let's calm down. You want to come here and talk, bud? Come here.
Anyways, what you just heard there was a little Gypsy Hawk, Silver Queen. Check out the rest of that record. It came out in 2012. Revelry and Resilience. I never did a best of 2012 list a year ago, but if I would have, that album definitely would have ended up on the list. So let's talk about a few things that went on this past week. The Grammys announced... The Grammys. I will be up in a few minutes, all right, dude? The Grammys gave their nominations, nomination press conference or whatever you call it, this week. And the complete list for some of the categories that we might be interested in are, let's say, I'm scrolling right now. Best Rock Performance, Always All Right, Alabama Shakes, The Stars, David Bowie, Radioactive, Imagine Dragons, Kashmir, Led Zeppelin, My God is the Sun, Queens of the Stone Age, I'm Shaking, Jack White. Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting that they've put Kashmir on there from the Celebration Day DVD slash CD release, Led Zeppelin with Jason Bonham. I was a little bit disappointed in that myself. You know, I just felt like it was fun to see them all up on stage again playing this stuff, but there was a certain energy or something that I felt was missing, and could, I guess, be expected that it would be missing, that being that these guys are pushing 70 now, you know. So kind of interesting. I love My God is the Sun by Queens of the Stone Age. A great, great song. I was not as excited by the Queens of the Stone Age album, you know, as on the whole. I thought there was like two really awesome songs on it. And I didn't think that the album itself was as good as some of the stuff they've put out in the past. I'm talking about, of course, Like Clockwork is the name of that Queens of the Stone Age record. This is all my personal opinion, you know. And what else did the Grammys go on to nominate? They had Best Metal Performance, which these are songs that they do for Best Metal Performance. TNT by Anthrax, God is Dead by Black Sabbath, The Enemy Inside by Dream Theater. I've had a number of you guys tell me how good that new Dream Theater record is. I'm definitely not like a crazy Dream Theater guy. That's just me. I do appreciate them. I know they're great musicians, you know, but that's I know that'll turn some of you guys off. I'm sorry, but I'm just being honest. However, I've seen them in concert, and I always love seeing them in concert. I especially liked it when they opened up for Maiden back, I think, in 2009, because that was just like all the big hits and stuff, or the big popular Dream Theater songs, if you will. They've never had a hit, but you know what I mean. Anyways, again, let's recap. Best Metal Performance, according to the Grammys, or at least who they've nominated for Best Metal Performance. TNT, Anthrax, God is Dead, Black Sabbath, The Enemy Inside, Dream Theater, In Due Time, Killswitch Engage, Room 24, Volbeat featuring King Diamond. I know a lot of you guys love Volbeat too. I appreciate them too, but I'm not walking around with a super big heart on for Volbeat like everyone else seems to be doing. So I know I'm in a lonely club with that opinion. But I don't think they're bad. I don't think they're bad. I just don't love Volbeat. Like, some people are going crazy over Volbeat. All right. Best Rock Song. Ain't Messing Around, Gary Clark Jr. I don't even know who the fuck that is. Cut Me Some Slack, Dave Grohl, Paul McCartney, Chris Novoselic, and Pat Smear. Songwriters, the same bunch. I don't know. That song's not that good, honestly. I mean, I know it's Paul McCartney who's awesome, and it's, you know, guys, the Nirvana guys who are awesome, but it's not that great. I loved the Sound City documentary and thought that was awesome. I think that's where that song comes from. Jim Rhoda, by the way, from Fireball Ministry, produced the Sound City documentary with Dave Grohl. It was directed by Dave Grohl, and I was glad they gave, you know, metal and hard rock its due, and they included Vinnie Appice in that documentary. Sound City, again, was a recording studio in the Los Angeles area, and there's a great documentary out about it, and there's a soundtrack that goes along with the documentary that has this Paul McCartney song that he did with Dave Grohl and Chris Novoselic and Pat Smear. Pat, of course, was part of Nirvana in the final year or so, I would say. Anyways, to continue on with the nominations for Best Rock Song, Doom and Gloom, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, God is Dead, and I love the Stones, don't get me wrong, I just wasn't, again, totally excited by the last album by the Stones. God is Dead, I love that song, man. I love the Sabbath record. I love the Black Sabbath 13 record. It's on my top 10 list for the year. Some people don't like that particular song. I love it. I think this is a great freaking song. Panic Station, Matthew Bellamy. Love Muse. So I was, you know, if Muse have a lot better songs than that, but it's cool that they got a mention. Best Rock Album nominations for the 2014 Grammys are 13 by Black Sabbath, The Next Day by David Bowie, Mechanical Bull by Kings of Leon, Celebration Day by Led Zeppelin, Like Clockwork, Queens of the Stone Age, Psychedelic Pill, Neil Young with Crazy Horse. I'm not going to comment on these anymore. I'll just read them. I think that's about it. I don't think we care about Best R&B Record, Best Rap Performance. I will say I have a Best of 2013 song list also listed on TalkingMetal.com. And not to freak you guys out, but that particular list includes songs that are not hard rock or heavy metal. So I recognize that some of those songs you guys might not be into. However, the top 10 albums of 2013, according to me, Mark Striegel, that's listed on TalkingMetal.com, that is strictly hard rock and heavy metal, because there were a lot of other records that I did enjoy this year that wouldn't fall under the hard rock heavy metal umbrella. And I actually list a few of them on the site. Go check the list out. It's a fun list to read through. I tell you what, I'll read you right now. Let's read through some of the list. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'll hit a couple of them for you. My number one favorite record of the year, and again, I always have trouble with the pronunciation of this, Infestizumum by Ghost BC. Awesome, awesome record. Actually, the producer who produced that record, another guy whose name I cannot pronounce, is featured prominently in the Sound City documentary that I mentioned earlier. My second favorite record of the year, The Winery Dogs. That should be of no surprise to you guys. My third favorite record of the year is the new Queensryche record. I'll jump around a little bit. My sixth favorite record of the year is Sounds Like Hell, Looks Like Heaven by a great band named Mustache. Love those guys. And I realized that record was actually released in Europe back in 2012, but it was not released here in North America until 2013. I did not hear it until 2013, which is why it has landed at number six on my top 10 of 2013, my top 10 heavy metal and hard rock records. Number seven, I have Life Sentence by Satan. Oh, what a great overlooked record, man. Go check that record out. It's so good. The production I love. It's so dry and just in your face. You can hear every little nuance. And there's, you know, not a lot of reverb or compression or anything like that. It's kind of, honestly, a real new wave of British heavy metal feel. It's a little rough, and I like that. I like that. And a lot of great songs on that record. Actually, let's hear one now, and then we'll come back and talk about my eighth favorite record of the year. And again, I had 25 albums that I loved this year, and it was tough to narrow them down. But, this is my number seven record of the year, a song off of that record. The record is Life Sentence. The band is Satan. And this song is Incantations. Sanctified. Heard was off of the album Life Sentence by the band Satan. Definitely check those guys out. One of the stronger releases of 2013. And I tell you, this was a late comer to my list, but Generation Kill, featuring Rob Dukes of Exodus fame, put out an amazing record called We're All Gonna Die. And I just spoke to Rob about it earlier today. I'm gonna play that interview for you now. We're not going to talk about Exodus. We're not going to really talk about anything except the new Generation Kill record. Again, this is an album that I consider one of the best of the year. It's number 8 on my list for the top hard rock and heavy metal records of the year. And again, the album is called We're Gonna Die. Again, the positioning of all these records is always tough, and Generation Kill, if I would have had a little more time with it, it was only just released, who knows, it may have been higher, it's hard to say, or maybe it would have been lower, I don't know, but at the moment I did the list, I felt like it had to be included, because it is really solid, great, potent record that is not, that leaves you wanting more. You know, the golden rule of show business is to leave them wanting more. I think there's too many bands and performers in general who forget that. It's something they didn't forget when putting together this new Generation Kill record. Again, the album's called We're All Gonna Die. Let's check out There Is No Hope. It'll be a little sound sample. Go buy the full song on iTunes. It's a great freaking song. Then we'll talk to Rob Dukes.
Yeah.
Hey guys, as promised, we have Rob Dukes on the line with us. Rob, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good, man. How are you? Waiting for the snow.
Yeah, man. I was just watching the game down in Philly earlier, and they're getting a ton of snow down there already.
Yeah, and it's headed our way. So.
Yeah, cool. And where are you? You're in North Jersey now?
Yeah, I'm like right on the border of New York and New Jersey, like right on the border of Pearl River, New York. Meets up with like Montvale and Park Ridge, and like right there. So.
Well, we had you back on the podcast on episode 400 for a real in-depth, detailed interview, but I wanted to catch up with you now and talk about the New Generation Kill album, which is out, and just talk about that. It really is a great record. Congratulations to you and the guys on putting out something that's of real quality.
Thank you, man. Yeah, man, I appreciate it. I figured I was hoping that most of the, like, you know, old school metalheads would get it. You know what I mean? I mean, I think, I normally don't read reviews, but I have on this one. I've been reading a couple, and, you know, some people get it, some people don't, you know. And, you know, they're like, oh, we only like the hard stuff, and they don't like metal. And they seem to forget, you know, like, that, you know, like, from Metallica, Testament, everybody, you know, does mellower stuff, from Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, you know. If you listen to Sad Ways of Destiny, it's got a ton of piano on it, and just mellow, and... You know, and the same with Iron Maiden, their first couple records. So, you know, I think we kind of did that because we, you know, that's what we like, and that's just the people we are. So we, you know, kind of tried to mix the album up and make it more diverse rather than just, I mean, honestly, it would have been easy to go in and just write, you know, just pure air songs the whole time. And to break it up made it was actually more challenging.
Yeah, I can imagine there's definitely a lot of diversity in it, yet it remains a very heavy record, at least to me. A song like There's No Hope, that blows me away. I love that song. How it starts so heavy and intense, and then it actually, unlike most songs, which, you know, a lot of songs start out mellow and then they build into the chaos, that's an interesting song because it almost comes down in intensity into a more... I guess mellow state, I'd call it. How did that song all come about? Do you guys jam these songs like in a room at first, or do you just knock around ideas on the internet?
Well, no, I mean, we all got in a room together. The guitar player, you know, both of them, basically what they had done is they had sent me a bunch of CDs, you know, songs, riffs on CDs. And I would drive around, I'd listen to them, and the CD, the riffs that stuck out to me, I would make a note, and then we would get into the room and jam, and I'd say, hey, man, play me that riff, you know, and then I'd, you know, put the CD on and go, this riff, and they go, okay, cool, and then we would kind of start there, and Velez had written that slow piece. It was a little different, but not much, and I really liked it, and I was like, I really want to do something with that, and I didn't know really where to put it, and then... I kind of said, hey, man, let's do something like Diary of Madman. Like Diary of Madman had that killer breakdown at the end with the guitars going real mellow, and then they had a chorus of people, of almost like a church chorus singing behind them. And I said, let's do something like that. And, you know, the song itself, you know, There's No Hope, it, you know, it's really angry, and then it just seems to go into this place of just, of almost like a quiet desperation, like, you know, the world's just, it's over. We're not coming back from where we were, you know, 50 years ago or 100 years ago. And I think it gets really sad. I think there's like a little bit of sad moments. I think the guitar playing at the end was really moving. And, you know, it gave me goosebumps listening to it, watching, you know, being in there while the guys played it. And, you know, it was, one of my favorite songs, actually, that we've written because it's just so dynamic. Like, the middle section is very, like, Beatles, almost has, like, a Beatles feel to it with a real dissonant chord and the multi-layering of the different voices and different vocal patterns I used. And, you know, so it was very, you know, it was a great song to write and be a part of. And, like I said, it's one of my favorite songs on the record.
Yeah, mine too. And one of my other ones is Carny Love, which has just a great, I guess I'd call it like a walking bass line at times. That's an intense song, and definitely digging on that one. Can you talk a little bit about the inspiration for the lyrics in that one?
You know, Rob had shown me that riff, the doo-doo-doo-doo, he'd shown me the bass line. I was like, oh, that's cool, man. It kind of sounds like a little bit of like a circus kind of feel. And then, so I said, I'm going to write songs about a circus, I think, you know, and kind of step outside. And then, you know, listening over and over again, and I had the idea just to kind of float it in my head of, you know, how do they, you know, like, how do they keep making circus people and like, you know, how do they keep making carny freaks, you know? And so they all have to kind of, you know, sleep together and, like, you know, keep perpetuating the you know, the freaks, you know? I mean, if you have web feet and like, dog face boy and all the, you know, on Taboo and all those weird people. So, you know, if they kind of mated, they could make, you know, weirder people and then, you know, make money from it by having people come see the thing. And it was just like this weird thought, and then I just kind of took the lyrics from there. I mean, it's really kind of how it started. It was just a simple question to myself, and then it became something really, I thought, really cool. And to me, it's the one song on the album. It was actually the first song we wrote on the album, and it was kind of like a divider between, you know, the album as a whole, you know, because the rest of the album's, you know, heavy, and that song just had something really weird about it. And to put it, like, right in the middle of the record, I was like, you know, this is a, it's kind of, you know, I said, you know, a lot of people aren't going to get this song, because it's just, it's very Mr. Bungle-ish, very kind of Faith No More.
Totally. When I heard it, I thought, you know, there's a Mr. Bungle influence.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Mike Towns is one of my favorite singers, and I'm a huge Faith No More fan. It just, it gave us the ability to do something different rather than just to keep, you know, like I said, we could have written 10 fast, heavy songs and done that over and over and over again. We could have. I mean, it would have actually been easier for us to do that. But to stretch out and to expand our musical horizons and do this, I mean, it was really challenging for our drummer, because I think that song actually goes into, like, some weird time changes at points, and it's very jazzy, and it has, like, this open kind of, and he was kind of challenged by it in the beginning, and then, you know, so, you know, the vocal line on top of it is just kind of trippy and weird and kind of just flows like this really, you know, like, organic kind of feel. It's, you know, it was actually when Zeus produced it, he was like, this is my favorite song. This is the one that is really, it stands on its own because it's just so fucking crazy. He goes, but a lot of people aren't going to get it, especially like diehard metalheads that only want to hear it heavy. They're not going to get this. But other people, you know, people like Buckethead and people like Faith No More and Mr. Bungle and some of the weirder projects, you know, are going to enjoy this. So.
Totally. Now, you guys chose to only put eight songs on the record, which to me is a good thing, because you always want to leave people wanting more when you listen to a CD, and there's so many CDs that they just go on too long. Was this a conscious effort to keep it short like albums used to be, or was that just kind of all you had at this point?
No, it was. We had more songs. We actually didn't plan it that way. When we sat down and first met with Zeus, and we talked about our favorite records, and we said, hey man, like, all of our favorite records, you know, Master Puppets to, you know, some of the Van Halen records, and, you know, we're all, you know, like the 70s albums, you know, like the Black Sabbath were eight songs, and let's not over riff the album, let's get everything to the point and make it, you know, make it, you know, very listenable and short. We just didn't want the over riffing to where you hear the same riff, you know, 50 times and then the lyrics start, you know. We really wanted to make things concise, and the songs were really important, where we said, okay, well, you know, each one is its own identity, but it's not going to, they're not going to be the same. So let's just kind of, you know, do what's for each song. And, you know, and we didn't want to have to, like, there was no fluff and there was no, you know, just, you know, oh, this song, let's just throw that on there because, you know, it's heavy or it's cool. You know, every song had a reason for being on the record. And we established early on that we weren't going to have a 60-minute record. We wanted to have something that was eight songs, one vinyl, old-school, 70s style, you know, go back to the days when that's the way they did it, you know. So that's how we did it. That's how we came up with the idea.
Totally. I remember I would buy those 90-minute cassettes, and it was always my hope that I could, you know, put two different records on each side of those 45 minutes, and it usually worked, you know,
I remember having, like, you know, Van Halen 1 and 2 on one cassette.
Yeah.
You know, and just having one vinyl, you know, nothing wrong with double albums, nothing wrong with longer songs. I mean, look, I'm a huge Pink Floyd fan, and, you know, they have songs where the lyrics don't start for 9 minutes, you know, and they have these long, drawn-out... And, that wasn't our intention. Our intention was to really just kind of, you know, make it, like, the album, if you can, like, the attention span of the average human being nowadays is so short. Like, if you don't give them, an orgasm in the first 30 seconds, man, you lost them, you know? And
right.
It just seems that, like, you know, people, they're, because of that, you know, and the ability to download your entire catalog of your entire life and with one click of a mouse, you know, I wanted the listener to be able to, like, this album is really great on headphones. If you put this album on in the beginning and put on headphones and listen to it for 40 minutes, you're going to have an experience. It's going to go up and down. It's going to be an experience of a ride rather than just, you know, full-on barrage of just, you know, the entire time. This was going to take you on a little journey, and if you follow the lyrics, which not everybody does, you know, most people, I don't know, you know, what most people like or don't like, but I've always liked lyrics. I've always read the lyrics and followed along and wanted to be taken on that journey. And you know, when I wrote all the lyrics for this, man, I worked really hard in doing that and making the listener maybe not learn something, but maybe just experience something while they're in this, you know. And the album as a whole was going to be a journey. It was kind of my idea behind it was like kind of like animals. Like when you listen to animals, you like wish you were here. It tells a story, and not only does it tell a story, it takes you on a journey. If you close your eyes and put on headphones and listen to music in the dark like I do, or like I used to a lot more, you're taken somewhere very cool. And I was hoping we could do that with this, you know.
Yeah, well, I think you succeeded definitely.
Thank you, man.
You've expressed to us in the past that it is hard for Generation Kill to go out and tour. Is that still the case with the new record, or do you have a little tour support and you might be able to get out there and do some shows across the country?
Well, we definitely are, we went to Europe for a month, you know, and that was an experience that we were glad to have. And, you know, we're going to continue to tour. I mean, we had some offers come up and that's what we're doing. So, you know, at the time, you know, Gary wasn't doing Slayer. So, you know, that was last time we spoke, Gary wasn't doing Slayer as often as he is now. So Exodus was really, I mean, I was on the road eight, nine months out of the year with Slayer. But because Gary's playing as Slayer, I have more time. So I'm going to be able to flip-flop between back and forth between the both and put more time into Generation Kill. And so whenever Exodus isn't touring, I'm going to try and get on the road with Generation Kill, you know?
Good stuff. Well, Rob, enjoy the rest of your Sunday afternoon. Thanks for checking in with us.
Thanks, man.
Hope to see you soon, man.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Maybe we got to, you know, talk Star Wars. We got a new movie coming out in 2015.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, JJ's already a little upset because they're kind of, Disney's pushing him to hurry up, but he's, fighting the good fight, going, no, it'll be ready when it's ready, and asking them not to put a date on it, but, you know, saying 2015, so...
Yeah, they fired the writer, I think, the screenwriter, right?
Yeah, they kind of did that. They kind of got, you know, they're bringing real people in. I really trust J.J. Abrams, and I really trust Kathleen Kennedy, who, you know, producing. So I think that between the two of them, I think all the right things are going to happen. And I'm not really worried about it. I think it's going to be an exceptional movie. Just like the Star Trek movies, I think it's going to exceed our expectations. But
well, let's hope so.
Yeah, man.
Cool, man.
like I said, for some reason, I could talk to you forever about Star Wars and shit. So
yeah.
But cool. But thank you for the interview. Thank you for liking the album. And like I said, let's get together soon.
Yeah, hope to see you, man. And again, I do love the record. It's great stuff. You guys did a great job with it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Despite everything you
what you just heard was a little sound sample, again, of Generation Kill. Probably a little more than a sound sample. But go pick up the full track on iTunes. That particular song we just heard was off the We're All Gonna Die record, Born to Serve. You hear babies screaming in the background? I have no fucking clue what's going on. My wife is upstairs with my kids, and there's something going on up there. Sounds like my three-year-old is freaking out. So hopefully you don't hear that, but if you do, that's what it is. Hopefully the noise gate I add to this track will pull out the baby crying. Anyways, yeah, man, thanks for joining us, guys. I always enjoy doing these shows with you, and I missed you guys last week. I didn't do an episode. John did a solo episode. I missed doing the shows with Victor. He was a little under the weather, and then he had his work Christmas party last Friday, so we didn't do a live show, but we will be back this Friday. So check it out. Support Talking Metal. We have a new sponsor coming in January. I really need you guys to at least click through the link to that new sponsor when we get that going. And in the meantime, please make a PayPal donation on talkingmetal.com. Those are always great. It's always great to hear from you guys. And also, buy a t-shirt. We have Talking Metal t-shirts for sale on talkingmetal.com in the merch section. And, oh no, my son's back. What's going on? Come here, dude. You want to say hi? Come here. Say hi.
Is that a wolf?
Yeah, come here. What's Grant crying about? Come here. Say your name, Sam.
My name's Harrison. My name's Harrison.
That's my buddy Harrison, my oldest son, 5 years old. And yeah, so do what you can to support us. You know, a lot of people are Christmas shopping and holiday shopping now. We have Amazon links up, and in every episode I post a link. If you go to the show notes on talkingmetal.com, you will see you know, in the show notes, like right now I'm at the last episode 447, and right at the bottom of the show notes it says support Talking Metal Digital. Buy a t-shirt in the merch section. Use the PayPal tab to make a donation, or use this link, and there's a link right there, to make a purchase on Amazon. That, of course, opens your Amazon. You can search your product. It doesn't cost you any more money. It's just an extra step. You go to Talking Metal and use our link to open Amazon, and we get some money back. I have no idea why Amazon does this. It doesn't make sense to me, but they do, and they give us money. So, you know, help us out. An extra step before you make that Amazon purchase. Go to talkingmetal.com. Use our link to open Amazon on your computer and then do your business. That's all you got to do. Cool. Thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate it. And real quick before we go, the Facebook page, of course, is happening, and we do get emails on that and posts on that. And I really do appreciate all those. And, you know, give us a like if you haven't done that. And, you know, here's Jay. A guy named Jay just sent me a little note on Facebook just the other day saying, just wanted to say that I love the podcast, man. Keep up the great work. Love the shows with Victor also. Just little stuff like that. That's the way you can support me, man. It's like, ah, wow, somebody's digging what I'm doing here, you know? And I honestly don't break even. I'm getting closer to breaking even now. I'm not complaining because it's fun. You spend money on your hobbies. You spend money on what you love, you know? But damn, if I could pull a minor profit on this, which I think I'm getting close to doing, man, I'd be freaking ecstatic. It would be a nice Christmas present to, you know, do more than break even on this. Ah, bah, 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 bah. Passing the tip jar, right? Cool. Guys, have a great holiday. Have a great Christmas. Again, we're doing a live show this Friday, which is December 13th. We'll have some live call-in guests. I love that Donnie G calling into the last podcast. It was freaking hysterical. Let me see. I feel like there was one other thing I wanted to read for you guys. Let's see here. Yeah, there is, actually. I got an email or a Facebook post or something. Let me see this. From somebody. Yeah, here we go. Yeah, this came into the Talking Metal Facebook page from Derek. It says, hey guys, I recently found your podcast and spent the better part of 2 days listening to it. It's cool hearing how band life is for the big and famous, and gives me something to look forward to being a musician as well, even if I'm a sucky one. lots of laughs. Love the interviews and love your podcast. You guys got a great fan for life. P.S. I'm sure you hear it a lot, but I want to chat with a crazy metalhead. Hit me up sometime. Cool, Derek. It's hard to talk to everybody. Maybe you could call into the live show, or we could call you. You know, if you listen to our live shows on Friday nights, they're not on every Friday night, but we're trying to get them on so they're more consistent. We have the ability to talk to you, listeners. You would just, you know, tweet us or email us at mark@talkingmetal.com, a phone number, and we could potentially call you, and you could chat some metal with us live on the live show, which then becomes a podcast the following week. All right, what should I play to freaking get us out of here? It's Christmas time, right? We could play the King Diamond, No Presents for Christmas, but that would be pretty fucking stupid, right? Why don't we play a little Lemmy? This would make sense. We were actually talking about Dave Grohl earlier. I believe Dave Grohl plays drums on this. It's called Run, Rudolph, Run. It's Lemmy Kilmister. And it's appropriate because Lemmy was born on Christmas Eve in 1945. He's older than my dad. It's crazy. Oh, God, yeah, good stuff. Oh, yeah, and this is Billy Gibbons on guitar. See ya.
Out of all the reindeer, you know you're the mastermind. Run, run, Rudolph, Santa coming far behind. Run, run, Rudolph, Santa's gotta make it to town. Santa make him hurry, tell him he can take the freeway down. Run, run, I'm feeling like I'm married around. Said Santa to a boy child, what have you been longing for? All I want for Christmas is a rock and roll electric guitar. And then away you went, Rudolph, whizzing like a shooting star. Run, run, Rudolph, Santa gotta make it to town. Santa, make him hurry, tell him he can take the freeway down. Run, run, Rudolph, I'm feeling like a merry-go-round. Hey! Run, run.